Welcome to Amazon Legends, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became power sellers. Also providers specializing in helping sellers, aggregators that acquire sellers, and former Amazonians will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here is your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest is someone always trying new things. He's always on the cutting edge and he loves starting stuff. And he's been on the show before and I love the conversations with him. So he's been in the e-commerce space for a decade and a half, both as a seller and a provider. He even supplied a piece of equipment to the legendary show Breaking Bad. So he's co-founder of Canopy Management, which is a leading full-service Amazon agency with focus on advertising and marketing. Also, he has a new platform called DeepM. And this is what I think is a revolutionary product or a service or a platform. You're going to hear all about it in a second. So I'm dying to hear. And when he's not working, which I don't know when, he likes RV travel and good food. With that, everybody, meet my guest, Brian Johnson. Welcome to, back to the show, Brian.
Nick, thank you for having me. You dug out some things from the past. I'm impressed. That was very well done. Thank you.
Well, you know, you tell me things and
they just stick.
I like to write them down, but you never know. You know, you never know what it is. And also, you know, Brian, what it is, it's about connection, right? So when people mention things that are important to them and you like the person, you want to make sure that, you know, it also sticks with you. So Plus Breaking Bad, one of my most, I mean, who doesn't like Breaking Bad, right? So, and you're going to do something I'm going to forget? No way. So today we'll talk about this new technology because you have been in this space and Amazon runs on data, runs on analytics, but who is making real good use of it and what is all that in perspective? You never know. So yeah. You put this as a challenge to yourself and then you've got this new thing. It's still not publicly available, we have to say. So,
correct.
But what is the driving force behind this? And tell us about the platform first, but more important, what is the methodology and what is it that that this is intended to solve?
Yeah, sure. So let me kind of give you a little bit of background history, kind of say like, how did we get here? You know, certainly as far as like my experience, I've been in, like you said, I've been in e-commerce for, you know, 15, 16 years now. And, I started out in the eBay space and then came over to Amazon space, been in the Amazon space for 10 years now, which is blows my mind. It's been that long. But a number of projects that I've had, that I've brought to market include software training agency, now back into software. And there's a common thread that occurs, you know, where obviously I put myself out there intentionally in order to try to educate more up and coming sellers to do better. Right. And the problem with that is that if you're any good as far as like getting your message across, then people listen and they actually put it into place and then everybody's doing it. And then that's kind of what we've run into. And I don't want to take the credit for like saying like, oh, I, you know, everybody does what I do, but I have to admit is that I've created most of my competitors. So in the advertising space. And so shame on me, but at the same time, I love the innovation and the chance to, you know, work on something new or different, I should say. So where we started out with was primarily like I was always initially got into the Amazon advertising space because I wanted to leverage, okay, how do I get more eyeballs? How do I get more visibility on the products that for my own products, for client products, because I actually was coaching a friend of mine and his girlfriend's brand back in the day. That's how I got started. And it was always for the means, you know, for you know, self-interest of trying to solve my own problem of how do I get visibility. And so the reason I had spent, you know, thousands of hours trying to figure out the advertising was to solve that. Well, even though Amazon continues to roll out a number of changes and new improvements, usually what they're doing is they're expanding their ability to make money. There's over 30 different ad placements that are available on Amazon today. Most brands don't even tap into a fraction of that, but they exist. And Amazon is kind of like, they're kind of like exhausting the real estate to say like this is a pay to play kind of thing. It's become a bit cliche to say, it's like, well, it's pay to play. It's like, yeah, okay. Tell me something new. Okay. What's the new, right? The new is that it's getting expensive. That's not a surprise to anybody that it's getting expensive to advertise, because every single PPC advertising platform on the planet always gets more expensive as it gets greater adoption. Same thing happens with Amazon. There are clients that we work with that are, you know, paying $5, $6, $7 cost per click just to compete in their niche. And at some point you're like going, I don't have the margins or the conversion rate in order to compete at $5, $6, $7 cost per click, right? It's a lot harder, right? And so then you have to focus back in on to just the natural search rank, the search results that come back when you do a search on Amazon, and what is commonly referred to as organic search, probably more accurately, just plain search, and trying to position a product. And there's a number of ways that we've found that as an industry, that we as an industry have found in order to game the system, in order to, there's gaming of reviews, there's gaming of unit sales velocity through things like giveaways and deep discount coupons and rebates and some of these kind of things, right? Reviewer pools, you know, some of these things that Amazon is attempted to shut down over time. Some of these things are still very active, but the biggest problem that we keep circling back around is there's a lot more complexity to the way that Amazon and, you know, as the label goes, A9, as far as how the algorithm judges products and how it sorts the products for the search results. There's a lot of elements that are involved. It's not just a magic bullet of, well, if I give away a bunch of product, therefore I'll win because it'll, you know, unit sales velocity is the only thing that it cares about, which is no. The answer is no on that. It goes into a lot more detail. I know I certainly want to give credit back to people like Danny McMillan, who has certainly done extensive research into A9, certainly contacts that I have across Amazon and within the industry, within our own mastermind, right, Nick? There are some brilliant people who are talking the data science and, you know, essentially the quantum physics of Amazon, if you will. We're behind the scenes trying to figure out, how does this stuff work? How do we understand how Amazon's algorithm works better? So the approach that I came into recognizing is that Amazon advertising is only going to get more expensive. And there's only so many tactics and strategies that you can implement and software automation that you can implement in order to solve that. At some point, it becomes just one lever out of several that you can pull in order to get attention and sales to a brand, to a product. And so when I started expanding beyond just the advertising realm, you know, I focused pretty heavily for a couple of years on, you know, listing optimization, listing SEO, conversion rate optimization. And that's been kind of overgeneralized in that it's like, people say, it's like, oh, well, you just need to optimize your listing. What does that even mean, right? What does that specifically mean exactly? And so what happens is, you know, I joined the bandwagon as far as like, well, I can create that service. I can hire some of the best graphic designers and videographers and copywriters on the planet, and I can have them on my agency team over Canopy, and I can deliver a fantastic product, and we do. But the problem is that it's a shotgun approach. let me go and optimize everything, redo all the images, create videos, rewrite the title, rewrite the bullet points, rewrite the description, rewrite the A+ content, the back end, like all these things come into play, and you're trying to make your best attempt to get attention to the shopper. You're trying to differentiate from your competitors, and you're ultimately trying to create that compulsion by the consumer to buy the product that increase that conversion rate, right? And ultimately the measure that we have is, did we sell more, right? All this combined is, did we actually sell more product? But there's way too many questions that weren't being asked or we couldn't answer at the time. Is that there's got to be more detail to this. There's got to be a way to figure out what's more important to A9 is the title. You know, a common question like, okay, well, if I'm going after a specific search term or search rank, does it need to be at the front of my title, the middle of the title, the back of the title, the bullet points, the back end search? Where does it need to be in order to have the biggest effect? Do I need to drop my price? Do I need to have just as many reviews as my competitors? Do I need to drive traffic from TikTok and Google and Facebook and wherever else, right? And the answer is yes, all of it. But what we found is I wanted to take a different approach to answer some of these questions, and that required a lot more data than I had access to. I have always had theories about how things work, and you know, things like you know, search term to browse node similarity and trying to match things up there, and buyer intention as far as what shows to like one of the philosophies there, one of the theories that I had was Amazon is going to show exact match targeted keyword ads to shoppers that they detect have a high intent of purchase. And so then the philosophy or then the response to that kind of argument is that it's like, well, what that means then is that I only need to run exact match because I only want high intent shoppers. Sounds good in theory, but what we find out is Amazon's only confident 20% of the time. Now they're more confident than, you know, now than they were, you know, a couple of years ago. But there's a lot of flaws to like that sounds like a nice theory and it's plausible and everything, but let's actually peer review this. Let's actually test this out. Let's actually test the science on this to see, is that a nice theory, academic theory, or does that actually work in practice? And what we find is it's a lot more, there's a lot more detail. There's a lot more exceptions that occur when you actually put it into practice. And we don't always know what those are. So the approach that I wanted to take now is to look at a much bigger data set than what's currently available through any tool that I currently use. And I subscribe to a bunch of different tools that are on the market. Some of the advanced ones that, you know, that are, you know, $500 to $1,000 per month, just in order to get, you know, some market share data, and they don't go far enough. Right. And so it was always frustrating to me because I'm like, I know there's more data here that we can get. And so we took a big data approach and came up with a way to essentially not only scrape data, but also pull together data from multiple sources, APIs, reports, Amazon's own site, search results, in order to collect so much data that we could then use what the technology that was now available. I'm not talking about large language models like ChatGPT. I'm talking about just machine learning in general, artificial intelligence approach, and using machine learning to analyze a large amount of data that would have taken you know, a team of people thousands of hours in order to analyze themselves. It's not practical to do it that way. You're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have, I actually calculated, so like it would take the average brand working for a single product niche. They would need at least 30, I think it was like 30, 32 full-time employees analyzing the data every single month in order to stay on top of it. Who's going to do that? You know, like I don't have that kind of
Exactly.
money to throw at a team just to do analysis, right? So it needed the technology to catch up. And so we've gotten to the point now where we can collect a large amount of data and not just analyze the data by itself, but then combine different elements of that data. An example on that would be if we look at a specific product niche, what we feed to the machine learning model is approximately 20 to 30 million data points about a single product niche, right? A single subcategory. And the system, because looking at that much data, it can see patterns that we wouldn't normally see as humans. We might have like, I kind of think that it's like, price seems like it works better in this, price adjustment seems to work better in this category. We have some of our own observations. But what we found is that analyzing the big data, we could determine, we could figure out where, how A9 weights 15 to 20 different ranking factors that it looks at on a product, performance, content, a number of things, for each subcategory, and determine where A9 thinks one thing is more important than the next. I had always assumed that it was the same kind of algorithm applied to all of the subcategories. Same rules apply. Just need this X amount of unit sales velocity. Helium 10's got their, what is it, the CR8 or whatever it is, that says like, hey, this
CTR,
is how many,
CTR quantity.
this is how many product you need to give away in order to rank well.
Yes.
Problem with those, if we circle back around to that particular method, if I give away a bunch of product, yes, it worked just as the service said it would that I paid. I was able to get on page one. And 4 weeks later, that thing's not on page one anymore. It slid right back down again. And we tell ourselves, well, that's because I didn't, my conversion rate wasn't high enough. Or we tell ourselves, I wasn't running advertising aggressively enough. I wasn't paying enough into advertising to keep it up there. The idea was always that it should stick the landing, it should stay there once we get there. But the reality is that you gamed one of 15 different factors. And when you stopped gaming that one aspect, that one factor, you normalized again.
Stop
A9 looked at the rest of your 14 factors and said, you're not good enough to be in page one, let alone top five.
Well, it's called the moving average, right? So everything is, so it may get you there. If I mean, let's look at it this way. What is CPR, first of all? CPR is the number of orders you need to take for getting on page one for that particular keyword over how long?
Yeah, I think it's like per day across 8 days, I think.
8 days. Not per day, not so many,
I think it's
whatever
per
the
day
number is.
across like 8 days, but I think that number has changed a little bit. I mean, I don't normally actually use CPR,
Yeah,
but
my understanding is how many in total you're supposed to give away over a period of 8 days. And if you do that, then within 2 weeks, you are going to be on page one.
correct.
So, what does that mean? Let's take X number, let's say 35 pieces, it says. 35 divided by 8 is about 4 or 5 a day. So, if you sell 4 or 5 a day every day, of course, you're not going to sell 4 every day. You're going to
Right.
sell 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5, 5, 6, 6, whatever. Then it's going to go. So, what does that tell you? Your order velocity or your sales velocity is averaging for a day.
Correct.
If you drop that just after you get it, then you're done, right? So you are out of the picture. So that's the easiest way for people to understand how reliable this is. So we are going way beyond that. So anyway, keep going.
I
I
mean, you're
always
definitely
get.
onto something that is absolutely correct, and that is, the philosophy or the normal practice, I should say, in the industry is, well, you need to test it. You need, if you're going to take an advertising camp, if you're going to create a solo advertising campaign, solo single word keyword campaign all by itself, you know, and you're adjusting things like placement and which bidding strategy you're using, and you're jacking up the bids and all this kind of stuff. You're doing all these things in order to increase the sales, the visibility, and the sales velocity. So you maximize the sales velocity. Search term impression share report comes back and says, yeah, you're number one, you know, as far as search rank for this term. Cool. This is the most that I can do. Why is it not enough? Because, first of all, you don't know how many units you need to beat your next competitor, let alone your whole competitive set, right, within your subcategory. And two, you don't know what else that Amazon is judging in its A9 algorithm about your listing and its performance. Because you could be in a commodity product where Amazon, where A9 is looking at price more closely and will weight price, 20%. And 20% is generally the highest that any one factor will get. Once in a while, we see like a 30 or 40%. Usually around unit sales velocity. In those situations, gaining that unit sales velocity will work temporarily. But again, it may be only 20, 30% of the total picture. And if you're weak on the rest of those factors, that could be, is your content, you know, aligned? In other words, is your title similar to what search term you're going after. There's a whole rabbit hole we could go down as far as like just as far as like content optimization when it comes to similarity, relevance, proximity, density, you know, all these kind of extra terms that can be bolted on in order to explain different intricacies about how content is analyzed and weighted and valued by A9. But ultimately, you've got things like your title, your bullet points, your description, your hidden classic description, your visible A plus description, your back end, you know, alt text keywords, your back end generic keywords or additional search terms in the back. What images that Amazon is able to translate and say this means this thing, you know, in the images. We can look at, oh, and all like the specs, you know, like made in China, you know, weighs X amount of dollars, what, you know, weighs X amount of pounds, whatever. It's looking at a lot of these different factors, and it's also looking at things as far as like, okay, how many reviews do you have relative to your competition? What is your average product rating relative to your competition? What's your price relative to competition? Are you FBA Prime? Do you have inventory in the warehouse that's closest to the consumer that's shopping right now? Are you running a promotion? You know, do you have a discount coupon? Are you running a lightning deal? You know, there's just, it just keeps on, you know, bolting on, right? Are you selling on eBay? Are you selling on, I mean, these things come into play. Amazon actually looks at this kind of stuff, right? Are you sending traffic from TikTok versus Facebook? There's a lot of different factors. What is your conversion rate of these units? So that's kind of like the, that's not an exhaustive list, but that's, it kind of gives you an idea of there's a lot of things that A9 wants to take into consideration, and it varies from one product niche to another, and one subcategory to another, because price will make a huge difference in a commodity. If you're buying paper towels, you're probably going to go for like, okay, you know, this is a brand that I trust, and it's available from 10 different vendors. I'm going to go with whatever the cheapest is, right? So what have the consumers trained A9 to value the most in that particular subcategory for paper towels? Well, nobody goes through and looks at the reviews. Nobody seems to go through and look at the A plus content and review all the pictures and everything. They don't care about the ratings because they already have trust in that brand. They're simply like, who's the low price leader? Okay, price has 20% weight in the algorithm. That's going to have the number one heaviest weight as far as how we sort products in the search rank, in the search results. But then you go over to something like a luxury watch, and the consumers are training A9 that, well, everybody who buys seems like they go through and they look at all the reviews. And so the ratings seem to matter, and the review quantity matters. how much time on page matters, because they're looking at the images and they're looking at the reviews and everything. Price doesn't seem to come into play. And so price becomes a 5% impact in that subcategory, but ratings become a 20% impact, right? And so when we have enough data and we can kind of reverse engineer how A9 looks at each individual subcategory, we see a pattern that we didn't expect to see, but we do see it, in that each subcategory is going to have different factors that are going to bubble to the top. This is most important. This has a 20% rate, you know, weight. This has a 15%, 10%, 12, you know, 8%, whatever. So we know what the top, you know, four or five weighted factors are for a specific subcategory, so that in the case of DeepM, we can work with our users within our beta program and say, okay, this is where you need to focus most on, right? That's one aspect of having the big data. Second aspect of the big data is being able to, because you're looking at so much data, you're looking at how does every single product perform in all these different factors for every common search term that everybody's going after in that subcategory. So what that opens up is, now what you see is not only what are the holes in the competition. You know what? 30% of your top competitive set aren't attempting to rank organic, you know, to rank in the search rank for these collection of search terms. In other words, there's a lot less resistance for you to organically rank on these search terms because your competition's kind of leaving that open. They're not focused on it. So that becomes an opportunity for you to go after. Now, not all your products qualify. Not all your products have enough quality in each of these factors that matter to the subcategory in order for you to rank on page one, let alone top five for these search terms. But if you look at enough of the data, we can identify what is, you know, look, you've got these three products and you've got these 10 search terms. These are all opportunities. They match up and your competitive competition is weak on those. Go after those. These are easy wins, relatively easy win. We're talking like 2 or 3 month, you know, moving from page three to page one to top five, you know, within 3 months kind of approach. Right? That's the general idea. So we can see that. That's a level of situational awareness of not only what matters to A9, as far as which factors do I need to focus my attention on in this subcategory? What are the holes that I can exploit among my competitive set? And how do I tune my products on each of these factors in order to beat my competition? And then the one thing that I added on was like, well, to really have this situational awareness, it can't be just a snapshot projection. It needs to be ongoing every week. So now one of the things we do is we pull in data every single week and reanalyze it and say, okay, what's changed? Well, three of your top 20 competitors, you know, got a hold of ChatGPT and they optimized their title and now it's pretty and it reads well. And that gives them a 1% bump, you know, improvement on that factor. So now you know you've got a 3% disadvantage to your top three competitors on title, but, you know, so you can work on focusing on that. Or you can go and say, you know what, you've got much better chance of improving your bullet points, let's say, or your sales velocity, or your, you know, getting rid of one-star reviews or some other factor that is important to A9 for that subcategory. You can outweigh it. You can overcompensate somewhere else in those factors and make up for that lost ground so that you always have a higher average, you know, scorecard, if you will, compared to your competition. And that's something that we continue to evolve and learn from and start adding in things like seasonality and prohibited word lists. And, you know, there's a lot of other factors, you know, reevaluating conversion rates and these kinds of things. So there's a lot of other performance factors that we're taking a look at. Oh, I was going to say one of the things that I like I had this idea. It's like, wait a minute. Like, if we can figure this out, if we can figure out which search terms, which collection of search terms can move from, like, say, a page three to a page one, maybe top five, maybe even number one, right? If we get enough of those search terms in the same subcategory, how many units is that going to move? And is it enough to gain the bestseller badge? So now we're developing part of our tool set internally is to figure out, okay, can we figure out, we can, but spoiler alert, we can, is figure out, do you have the ability to get a bestseller badge in your subcategory simply by identifying a collection of opportunity search terms that you can rank much better for, and therefore jump your, you know, or essentially increase your sales velocity with a certain amount of advertising, but ultimately it's going to be on targets that actually stick the landing, because you're also not only because it wants to be there, it wants to rank for that search term, but also because you've improved the other important factors that A9 cares about for that subcategory, so that once you get there, you actually stay there. You don't just slide right back down again because you don't belong. You actually do belong. Here's how.
I have a question for my listeners. Are you experiencing cash flow challenges with your Amazon business? Well, silly question. Who is not, right? So let me introduce you to Viably, a unique solution tailored for Amazon sellers and e-commerce enterprises. By connecting your Seller Central or Shopify account, you can promptly access funding along with a variety of financial tools, all for a flat fee. It's as simple as that. And for my listeners, they are offering an extra $1,500 in funding for eligible applications. Start your quick and easy application today at runviably.com/legends. And that's runviably.com/legends. So what you have is really, you are, I just have a thought as you were talking about, putting the thousands of hours of work. I mean, this work that you're doing, you're building this whole thing. So when we did our first recording, it was over a year ago. And so since then, you've been doing this, and I'm sure before you started before.
Yeah, it disappeared for like the last year and a half. That's true.
Yeah. So the amount of time and money you spent, they say everything is for sale for the right price. I wonder if it would have been possible to buy one of those guys who work at Amazon and develop that search A9 algorithm. Do you think you could bribe them and bribe them into doing whatever?
You don't necessarily need a bribe. So one of the things that I thought was extremely smart is the CEO for the agency for Canopy Management. He looked at some of the retiring executives from Amazon. And one of the ones that he was able to hire and consulted with us for a year, he had like 16 patents on the product detail page. And the content team and how everything was structured and what the focus is of the design team for doing SEO, you know, listing optimization and creation was based off of what he taught us about how the algorithm looks at and what the timing is and how long, you know, consumers stay on this element and this element, where their eye gets drawn to them, like all these different factors. So that is a brilliant move, and it has actually worked for, you
Wow.
know, it does work, you know, is if nothing else to get some consulting insights, you know, as far as like, okay, how does this
Right.
work and what's more important here, A or B, you know? So I that absolutely, yeah, it's
Well, I
We
mean,
still have our
that's
blind spots. You know, there are still blind spots that can't be observed externally as far as the specific conversion rate. There's a lot of clues that are, you know, the breadcrumb trail, you know, the clues that are left around where we can do some estimation of, sales velocity and conversion rate at the search term level, and these kinds of things among a competitive set. And so we are continuing to tune how we estimate those. But yeah, there's always going to still be some blind spots for any technology or system.
Yeah. So ultimately, what your technology will do is show people how to move on page one and then stay there. And then, also do that on a collection of search terms and everything else, right?
Yeah, the outcome is to increase sales, really. Increase sales because the product shows up for search terms very highly in organic search, and doing that without the need to go heavy into advertising. Now, anytime you're using, I mean, advertising is just one lever, right? Among multiple things that you can do in order to improve sales velocity, to improve all these different factors, right? So we want to take a holistic look at, like, okay, what are the top factors, and what are all the factors that can easily be influenced? Because even if you can get a 1% increase in one factor that is minor, it's still a 1% increase, right?
Sure,
If you can move, something from a 15% impact, and you got a kind of a, 15% quality score, let's say, right? It's all relative to your competition. So the important part on that is, it's not that there's one magic bullet. There's not one magic metric that it's like, well, I've got to hit, 80% optimized in my title for density and relevance. It's like, no, if your competition is at 79%, then you need to be at 80%. If they're at 50%, you need to be at 51%. That's what it comes down to, right? Like,
Well,
don't blow a whole bunch of time on something that doesn't matter.
exactly. I mean, what you just said reminded me of this documentary. I don't know if you saw it, but if not, you have to watch it. It's called The Man Who Built America. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. I'm going to.
Oh my God. I want to know what you think about it after you watch it. It's not
Okay.
one single episode, it's multiple episodes.
I have been just diving into all these, these dramatic documentaries of, things like how did, like all these startup companies, as far as like WeWork and all the, like, I can't get enough of these
Have you
things,
seen the Uber story? The Super
Yes,
Uber?
yes.
Oh, that was great. My favorite scene in that documentary. I want to tell you about this this documentary. On that movie, Supercharged, was when he's served the cease and desist letter. They are out of business. That's it. They are done.
Yeah.
And he takes that and he turns that into a declaration of war or
Four.
whatever, a victory. He turns that thing into a victory and he gets everybody pumped up. I mean, it's unbelievable. But anyway, you've got to watch this
A
documentary
man who built
and
America.
everybody watching and listening to the show, you guys have to see this. It's called The Man Who Built America. It's the story of Rockefeller,
Yep.
JP Morgan, all these guys, Henry Ford, how they did it. I should say the guys, there's two partners, but the founder who made this documentary is a friend of ours. They won the Emmy. And
Nice.
he did a little group event where he brought his team and they presented to us how they went about doing it. Now, the real story that it's a huge success. He has since sold his company. But he spent 5 years pitching the story to studios. And they said, no,
No.
no, no. And then finally, he figured out what makes it different is they use different formats. So documentaries are typically, some footage, somebody talking, and some documents.
Yeah.
So it's all that they and then they started to add reenactments, and what they did different that was the deal breaker in terms of getting success is whatever the subject matter was, they found celebrity-like leaders talking about what that person had done. So in this show, they have Jack Welch, Mark Cuban, Donald Trump,
Nice.
and of all these different leaders talking about Carnegie, talking
Right.
about JP Morgan. So
I
it
love
was
that.
a great thing. So the reason why I bring this up is if your competition does 50, you have to do 51. The minute that you say that, you watch this, they say that successful entrepreneurs, they thrive on competition. The reason why they thrive on competition is because they live to take them out. That's the name of the game. And I tell you what, my all-time favorite move, Rockefeller. He's now on his way to being a huge success. He is distributing oil all over the country and he's expanding. And guess what he's using to transport? Trains, right?
Right.
Of course, because he's filling all their freight capacity, and that's why he can dictate the price. So what happens is the main guy, Vanderbilt, right? And the next guy, nobody remembers the second guy, and I don't either. So the two of them, because they are in competition with each other, so they can't really do anything. The two of them get together and say, you know what? We keep going up against each other to get his business. What if we agree and we go and we tell him, this is what we want, otherwise we're not carrying and you are out of business. So they do that. So you know what Rockefeller does? He says, okay, give me a little time to think about this. And then he goes around his team and he's thinking. And so he comes back and he gives his answer. You know what his answer is?
No.
I'm not using either one of you. They say, well, how are you going to get your oil across the country? You know how?
Ocean.
He builds pipelines.
Pipelines, okay.
Rockefeller is the one who created the pipelines.
It kind of reminds me of the when they changed the format for shipping for cross ocean shipping containers when they actually built the container, you know, the standardized containers as opposed to just, you know, baled together, you know, pallets. You know, they actually switched to the container. They could do 10 times the volume than they did
I mean,
previously.
how are you going to get it from, let's say, Austin, Texas to Salt Lake City, Utah? You can't use ocean. You have to do overland.
Correct. Yeah. So pipeline would actually solve.
This is not necessarily competing for oil. This is competing to stay alive, right? So
Right.
these guys come together and say, you know what? You need us more than we need you. He says, oh, yeah, okay.
I, you know
Pipeline.
what? And that's part of the thing that I love about business is that, you know, it's not about crushing the competition, right? It's not even about winning. It's about innovating. Trying to
That's
be
it.
clever, you know, more clever than I was before. That doesn't even
That's
have to
it.
be about anybody else. Am I clever enough to beat myself? That's why I love startup, you know,
Yeah,
business
it's rally
startups
driving,
is I get to do
Brian. It's
that.
rally driving, because when you drive doing rally driving, it's all about yourself. You have a co-pilot next to you, and then he's constantly telling you, turn right, turn left, go straight, go straight. And so it's all about how you can you do more time.
Yeah.
And rather than Formula One beating the next guy, I think it's a bit of a mindset, but I'm dying to hear now. These guys made another documentary called The Men Who Made Wars. In that one, they look at General Patton, they look at Hitler, they look at Churchill, they look at they look at all these people. So at the event, we asked him, this The Men Who Made Wars hadn't come out yet, obviously. So we asked him, what's the plan? What's next? They said, well, right now we've got men who made wars, and then we are thinking about the men who made gangs. So it was all about the concept, the men who made whatever. I'm sure they would include women in that. But anyway, the company didn't survive past the men who made wars. It got sold. And that the men who made gangs never made.
Yeah, it never came to fruition. You know what, though? I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm looking at some of the new technology that's certainly coming out. And obviously, we could talk about this for days alone, but some of the new video technology that, you know, like OpenAI is coming out with, and some of these others are, you know, are you're getting a lot more attention on the AI creation of video. Imagine, you know, I hear people talk about, it's like, oh, well, I was going to get into, you know, video editing or whatever. It's like, my career is over with. What am I going to do? And woe is me. And it's like, you have the ability to create your entire documentary, to create your entire movie, and just get your thoughts and get your creativity out there without the inhibition of having to learn everything. I went to film school. I didn't survive. But one of the things that I thought was kind of funny was, because this is something I did as part of a, I guess maybe this was my midlife crisis, because I did it when I was about 40, is I went back to school. I went to film school, and I was surrounded by people who were, you know, 18, 20 years old. And you know what they wouldn't do? They wouldn't get dirty. You know, some of the equipment that you set up for, you know, filming a shot, whatever, requires you to get down and to build a set or to build tracks, or you to get down and to scrape your knees and get hurt and you get bruised and everything in order to get it set up. You know what? Who was down on the ground? I was. You know, and it's not because like, oh, I'm better. No, I just wanted, I was willing to do what it took.
Sure.
You know, and these guys would stand around like they were a construction crew holding the shovel, just watching the guy work. I'm like, you guys don't want this. I'm like, oh, this is my dream. It's like, apparently not.
Yeah.
Because if you really cared about it, you would come back at it again and again and again and just keep forcing, just keep going after it, even though it hurts.
Well, you know, there's this, and I love movies, as you can tell. So there's a scene in this movie. It's about, I think it's a football, all centered around football, as this coach coaching this team, young team, high school team. And it's the end of the practice, and they're completely exhausted. And it says, oh, coach, you know, can't wait to just wrap this up. And it says, you can't wait to wrap this up. Why? We're exhausted. Says, oh yeah, let's see how exhausted you are. And he gets this big guy in the team, one of those big,
right,
huge. And then he takes one of the skinny ones. Says, now you get down to the skinny one. Says, now you, the big one, get on his back. Now, I want you to go all the way up and then back. And he says, no, you got to be kidding. You know, we're exhausted already. No. Let's see how far you can go. So he keeps pushing, and he's pushing and pushing, yelling, you know, as they are pushing. And finally, they go up and back. And then he says, so you are exhausted. He says, you don't tell me you're exhausted. You don't tell me you're going to do your best. You don't tell me you've done your best. You do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
That's the culture.
Yeah.
So
you literally keep going, you know. Of course
it's
gonna hurt. If it doesn't hurt, then you're not trying hard, you know.
No pain, no gain, right? So
of course this is from a generation of people who are like, oh, my joints, and like, oh.
So when is your platform gonna be available?
Well, here's what I'll tell you. We have a beta group. So we're currently in beta. We'll be testing this out and developing out some of the additional software. And one of the things that I love doing is, of course, is like every other week I come up with something new. It's like, oh, we could do this and we can add, you know, so like our software roadmap continues to grow. Right. And a lot of it has to do right now with just making sure that our beta testers are, you know, are succeeding, and we're learning from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that probably we would probably go to release probably in 6 months. But I got to be honest with you. Right now, we've let in a number of people into our private beta testing group, and we'll still let additional candidates come in and join that beta during this next 6 months before our planned release. But it comes across. Here's what I'll tell you is that one of the things that is on the table that we're considering is to never go public with it. Keep it private, keep it in-house. Sure, we'll grandfather in the people who are part of the beta program, but keep it in-house and go into not necessarily become an aggregator, but start working with brands, maybe acquiring brands and keep it in-house. That's a possibility that we may end up doing.
It's
So
like a whisper campaign. You've never heard that term?
what is that?
So the best way to spread the news is saying, "Shh, I got something. Don't tell anybody." Actually,
It's restricted, yeah.
I have a story about this. Mark Ruffalo was at this premiere or some screening of a new movie. And this is the early days of Facebook Live. So he's at this event before. There's like a little cocktail thing, and then they get invited. This is like closed to the public. So he goes in and he's watching the movie, and then he tells this story, very funny. His phone is in his pocket, keeps buzzing, and he says, "Just like any other responsible citizen, I ignored it. I kept ignoring it. But after a while, the phone started ringing, and I had to leave. And then I have his assistant or whatever on the phone. 'Are you crazy? What the hell are you doing?' And he goes, 'What are you talking about?' She says, 'You are live on Facebook.' Apparently, he forgot to turn it off, and the whole movie airing was live on Facebook. So, oh my God." And he's like, he says, "That's it. I'm really screwed up." And so it's the following day. He goes to the office, and the studio head, they say, "He wants to see you." He says, "Of course he does." And he goes into his office, says, "Sir, I'm so sorry. I'm really screwed up. I didn't know about Facebook Live, and I'm so sorry. And whatever you say." And the guy gets up, walks over to him, and he says, "You're kidding. It was the best thing ever, the best publicity event we ever had." So anything secret. So maybe one of those campaigns would do.
Right. Well, I was kind of looking at it from a standpoint of like I wasn't thinking of like a whisper campaign, but now that I think about it, it's like, yeah, I guess that is kind of like shh, don't tell anybody.
Those are
No,
usually the
but
stuff.
I'm more of an open book, I'm kind of like transparent that way.
Well, you could be open about whispering,
Yeah, that's true. So
know.
just get in the bay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love
Oh,
that
that's
actually.
great.
Whisper campaign.
Well,
That's good to know.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm always interested. And everything that you have always has this cutting edge. So this one, I mean, obviously people can, so share with us the information. Where can people go learn about this? I mean, I know it's not open, but you have a website still that you have some
Well,
information
like I
there.
said, like we're certainly welcome, we can certainly welcome some additional beta testers who have our restriction is that we're only working and part of our beta program. So to answer your first question, deepm.ai is our website, and the M is for marketplace, it's for e-commerce. But currently we are only working with brands that are selling on the US market, US Amazon marketplace. The plan is to go multi-channel, multi-marketplace. So the US Amazon marketplace, 3P, just because Seller Central has better reports than Vendor Central, which sucks for those who are on Vendor Central. So yeah, so US Amazon Marketplace, Seller Central account have at least, I would say, probably 10 SKUs selling within the approximate same subcategory or similar sibling subcategories. That seems to be the best combination. We've worked as small as, ones that have had just a couple but are doing a lot of volume in those couple. We've also worked with brands that have 50,000 SKUs. In that example, the system came back and had thousands of recommendations. They're still trying to implement those 6 months later. So we find this kind of, okay, that's too many, because we can find too many opportunities. But the nice thing about, of course, is that one of the cool parts that we have is the week-to-week and that situational analysis, I think, is probably one of the best things. It's not just, hey, here's an opportunity to rank for a search term. It's what's that 50 versus 51% comparison between my product and my competitive set, so that I know exactly what to tweak in this specific subcategory and know how that changes from 1 week to the next. Somebody changed their price, somebody changed their title. Amazon's AI changed their title. Did that help them? Did it hurt them? We're aware of all that, so that I think is extremely cool. I can absolutely, you already know, is like I can completely just geek out on this stuff, and so I can go full nerd, in a heartbeat, getting into the data science on this. But this has been a fun year, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I have not been public, I haven't gone to shows, I haven't been speaking. This is me sticking my head out of the, out of the what do you call the what's the Groundhog's Day? Was this is me sticking my head out. And so yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on, because I always enjoy speaking with you, because you get a lot of the science, and I love the fact that you gave me the man who built America and the man who made war. That's the very next thing I'm going to go look for.
Well, listen, I have plenty more. My friends know that when they meet with me, they're gonna leave with a list of movies to see. I love movies. This is a long time ago. Somebody asked me, who's your most favorite entrepreneur? Being in tech, people expect, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and whatever. But no, for me, no. You know who my favorite top guy is? George Lucas.
Oh, yeah.
You know why? Because the
Because he's
guy imagined
from nothing.
out of nothing, and then he produced, highly technical, by the way, to the extent that he came back and did the prequels. And then
Well,
he monetized the hell out of it.
you look at people like George Lucas, you look at writers like Gene Roddenberry, and some of the science that we have, 20, 30, 40 years later, they're still trying to figure out how did, somebody like a Gene Roddenberry come up with like this technology, because it turns out it's like that's actually accurate before we could even suggest that it was accurate through quantum mechanics.
Well, my favorite was in Star Trek, Mr. Spock always carried this little thing with a little strap over his shoulder, and it had a screen. I never forget, if you may remember the episode where Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock ends up in like 1950s, and then there is a woman and Kirk falls in love or whatever. And at the same time, they are stranded. They don't have any resources. They can't be back or whatever. And Spock is doing research. And I never forget, he builds this whole thing, and then he's looking at newspapers in his device. And I looked at it, I thought, oh my God, this would be so cool. And look at that now. We got something even better. And everybody's carrying it, right?
Well, and think about, like, I always remember, like, the the pin communicators on the shirts, and they just tap it and they would talk to the Enterprise, whatever, right? But do you remember in the previous one, in the original Star Trek series, it was always the communicator that they flipped open.
Oh yeah, it was always like Kirk always had that his way of opening it. Well, Brian, as always, it's a great conversation. Good luck with DeepM. I have no doubt it's going to be great success. Once it's launched, we want you back again so that you can tell us more openly. And then we would be happy to learn.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Brian. So the contact info, deepm.ai.
Yeah, or they could just email me directly at brian.johnson@deepm.ai if they want to email me directly.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
Before I go, a quick reminder to say goodbye to your cash flow problems and claim your extra $1,500 when you qualify for $25,000 or more in funding. Go to www.runviably.com/legends and start your application today.
Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode. And I'll see you on the next one.
If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the episode, and share it with someone you think would benefit from it too.